Finance Committee will come to order. Right, roll call.
That's nice of Sarah. That's nice of Sarah.
Let's see. Representative Nash, would you move the minutes, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from March 8.
Any corrections or additions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Erdahl. Would you like to come forward with your bill, 3579?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll move House File 3579 be referred without recommendation to the Committee on Capital Improvement.
Representative Anderson. Representative Erdahl?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have the privilege today to present the bill to fund the improvements and the restoration at Fort Snelling, $30 million. Last year we did $4 million in pre-design for this. We are coming up on the 200th anniversary of Fort Snelling. There are some serious problems with the visitor center, and they wish to basically most of this money has to do with renovating other buildings to take the place of the visitor center. You may not be aware, but Fort Snelling was built in 1820, and the roundhouse there, if I'm not mistaken, is the oldest existing building in the state of Minnesota. And so with that, I do have representatives here today from the Minnesota State Historical Society, and they will do the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you state your name and your direction, please?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. My name is Stephen Elliott. I'm the director of the Minnesota Historical Society. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present the Minnesota Historical Society's top priority for the 2018 capital budget, Historic Fort Snelling. And Representative Erdahl, thank you for authoring this bill and for your strong interest in Fort Snelling and your passion for history generally. Madam Chair, we would welcome the opportunity to take you all on a tour of this significant historic place. It's extremely helpful to see this place in person, to appreciate both the historic landscape and structures where so much of our state's history happened, and the significant facility needs at this historic site. This is a place where two major rivers meet, the Dote, where people have gathered for millennia, where cultures have met for generations, and it is the home of Minnesota's oldest building and oldest residence. Our vision for the site is to create a destination for discovery, learning, healing, and a place of community connection, and to engage visitors in a much broader range of history stories, beginning much earlier and extending the story of the fort and the hundreds of thousands who served there into the mid-20th century. Funding for this site will create a new visitor center and preserved historic structures. We will develop programs that will engage visitors in the many stories that have happened at this place. Madam Chair, if you come for a visit, you will have an opportunity to visit the current underground visitor center. Here are a few images of the chronic water penetration and serious maintenance challenges of that building. We are very appreciative of funding provided in the 2017 capital budget bill for design for this project. We've recently completed schematic design for this project, and we're excited to share some of the early ideas. I'm sorry, I wasn't aware that our PowerPoint isn't tracking here, but I think you have copies of the presentation in front of you. So looking at the schematic design images, visitor services will be located in two historic structures, buildings 18 and 22, and we will improve the visual connection to the Mississippi River. The floor plans give you a sense of the visitor functions that will go into buildings 22 and 18. So building 22 is an 1878 munitions building, and here we'll welcome visitors and orient them to the area as a whole, where they are in relation, for example, to the State Park, the Upper Post, and Coldwater Springs. It also provides much-needed space for school groups. Building 18 is a 19-4 cavalry barracks that will serve as the general visitor center. It will include 4,500 square feet of exhibit space, which more than doubles what we currently have available. And then the next page on the second floor, we have more space to accommodate school groups, programs, and meetings. This space for school groups in these buildings is important. Right now, we don't have enough space to accommodate school groups. We max out on the school groups we can accommodate on given days, and now we'll be able to increase that capacity. The state of Minnesota has made commitments for this project through two appropriations for pre-design and then last year for design. Our request this year is for construction. Typically, the state has responsibility for historic sites in the statutorily designated historic sites network. In the case of Fort Snelling, we know that Fort Snelling is important to many Minnesotans. So many have personal connections to the site. And we've committed to raising funds to supplement the appropriation that we hope that you will provide. Construction of Fort Snelling, as Representative Ertl said, began in 1820. We're approaching a bicentennial, not a centennial or a sesquicentennial, but a bicentennial for Minnesota at our first National Historic Landmark. We ask that you now approve this construction appropriation this session to keep the Fort Snelling project on track for its 200th birthday. We are also requesting funds for asset preservation for the state's 25 other historic sites. There are 154 structures on these sites, nearly half of them more than a century old, and it's imperative to maintain the structures and their systems on these sites to keep routine fixes from becoming major problems. So I've kept this overview fairly brief because we have a couple of other folks who would like to speak briefly on the project's behalf. And if I may, Madam Chair, Representative Ertl, yield some of my time to General Nash and Professor Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Oh, come on. It's okay to do one at a time.
Okay, we can do one at a time.
Right.
And I'll start. Hello, my name is Annette Atkins. I'm a professor emerita of history at St. John's University and the College of St. Benedict. I'm involved in the private fundraising for Fort Snelling for the Historical Society. And the Historical Society published my history of Minnesota called Creating Minnesota, a history from the inside out. So I come to you as a scholar, as a teacher, as a longtime member of the Minnesota Historical Society, and as a longtime studier of Fort Snelling. You know, many of us at the Historical Society and the Historical Society uses this history matters slogan. We have buttons. I don't have mine on today. I'm so sorry to say I have the historic Fort Snelling. But that we mean in a really significant, powerful, personal way, by which we mean we don't just, it doesn't just matter what happened, but it matters because if we know something about the past, it tells us what's possible. It tells us about the limits and the range within which we can live our lives. And history tells us who we are. And if you don't think that's true, think in your own lives, stories of your parents. and ways that family stories carry down. In my family, it was that my great-grandfather had run away from home in order to become a Catholic. And I got to tell you, that story shaped my family still. So even in 1980, I was offered a job at St. John's and a job at in Ashland, Wisconsin, at Northland College. I took the job at St. John's because it was a Catholic school, and I knew it would please my parents. I could feel the history of my family running through as I was making that decision. It seems to me that historic Fort Snelling has that power for an entire state. It tells us who we are. And for 150 years, Fort Snelling was an alive and vital place where lots of lives intersected and overlapped. For 50 years, we've been telling just one piece of that story. We've told the story of 1820s Minnesota soldiers and the construction of the fort and those first people there. And don't get me wrong, that is an absolutely important story. But it's sort of like me when I think about myself. I mean, I think I'm a woman, but that's only one way to think about myself. I'm also a teacher. I'm also a wife. I'm also a friend. I'm also an aunt. I mean, that I have so many identities, and if I lead always and only with being a woman, I diminish sort of who I am. And it feels to me that what we do at Fort Snelling right now is to tell one wonderful story about who we are. But in telling and freezing that one story, we leave out so many other stories. One of my colleagues is going to talk about the Japanese-American story there. There, we have 1,000 years of Native American history there. We have the story of immigrants who went through there. We have stories of soldiers of the Civil War, of World War I, of World War II. It's part of Walter Mondale's story. It's part of my own ancestors' story. Not the Catholic ones. These are the different ones. My own ancestors, the Langlands, who came and ended up in southwestern Minnesota in Jackson County. And I expect that your stories all also have some connection there. So what the Historical Society is asking for is the opportunity to expand, to revitalize, and to enrich those stories that we can tell ourselves. Part of why that's important is that we have so many people who visit that site. And I think we have the possibility of teaching those people how to be better citizens by understanding the richness of that past and seeing that Minnesota has always been a complicated, interesting, kind of messed up, wonderful place where people are trying to make relationships and lives work. And that's the story that the new facilities will help us tell, and that's a story that we can't tell right now, given our current facilities. So thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today.
Thank you, Ms. Atkins. Please identify yourself and start.
My name is Karen Tanaka-Lucas. I am a retired family physician from Apple Valley, and I represent the Twin Cities Japanese American Citizens League. My family has been an American family for well over a century, and I have been a Minnesotan for close to 50 years, a graduate of the University of Minnesota. My dad was a U.S. military soldier. He retired as a major after 20 years of service to our country. He was in the first class of mostly Japanese American soldiers intensively trained in 1942 at the then highly secret Military Intelligence Service Language School at Camp Savage in Savage, Minnesota. This was part of the first ever military language intelligence program in the United States and was housed in Minnesota during World War II because of the receptiveness of then Governor Stassen and the people of the state of Minnesota when a lot of other states were not receptive to it. It was moved to Fort Snelling when it outgrew the rudimentary facilities at Camp Savage and ended up training 6,000 Japanese-American soldiers in language intelligence for World War II and the post-war occupation of Japan. My dad served interrogating captured prisoners of war in the South Pacific, even as his whole family was incarcerated along with 120,000 other Americans of Japanese descent for over 3 years in what were then called internment camps. The military intelligence soldiers trained at Fort Snelling have been credited with shortening the war in the Pacific by as much as 2 years and saving thousands of lives and billions of dollars. After the war, Dad served for 8 years in the occupation of Japan along with other soldiers trained at Fort Snelling. These trained linguists worked in the disarming of the military of Japan. They worked in the war crimes trial. They worked in counterintelligence work. We appreciate the Minnesota Historical Society and Historic Fort Snelling, who have been working with us over the last couple of years in presenting programs highlighting the unique role of Minnesota in American history. Visitors from all over the country and our guest registries to these exhibits will testify from all over the world come to these exhibits. And we find that the current facilities for these exhibits at Historic Fort Snelling have been wholly suboptimal. The Japanese American Citizens League of the Twin Cities asks for your support of the funding for the revitalization of Historic Fort Snelling and the continued telling of the Minnesota story. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lucas. General Nash?
Madam Chair, I might mention that General Nash is working on his General Grant impression.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Major General retired Rick Nash, and I'm in front of you today as a volunteer board member of the Minnesota Historical Society, and I sit as a member of its executive council. So today I'm here to seek your support for the Fort Snelling Visitors Center request. And I also want to thank you for your previous appropriations of the design money that was spoken to earlier. And thanks to Chair Erdahl for his abilities presenting today. As a former commissioner of the Department of Military Affairs and as your Adjutant General of the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard, I will speak to the importance of this project for all of our soldiers, our airmen, our veterans, and their families. Our current history dates back to the 5th Regiment of the United States Infantry that arrived in 1819 to start building the fort. And we trace our current history back through the infamous 1st Minnesota Regiment and to our modern-day Army National Guard. And we continue to use Fort Snelling for our departure ceremonies, our promotions, our yellow ribbon proclamations to companies and corporations, and as a staff training venue for our soldiers and our airmen. Our nearly 14,000 men and women of your National Guard value that location. Currently, the Marine Corps, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Army are also on the et al. Fort Snelling complex in certain locations. It's not only a place where civilians, veterans, and their families gather to learn and study military history, but it provides the venue to understand our pre-Fort Snelling history that needs to be researched and fully understood. As we continue to unearth our Native Americans' history and their culture and their story that needs to be fully documented and preserved and then presented to our state and our visitors. As an emerging and diverse state, as Minnesota is, that values inclusion, we need a new venue for, and that is by repurposing the old cavalry barracks that fully explores then our Japanese-American heritage and their history at Fort Snelling, our African-American history, our Anglo-Saxon and our European ancestry, our culture and history as it impacted at that time the gateway to the statehood of Minnesota. An additional area that must be recorded and told is also the less documented and the negative aspects of the fort. And few people realize that it is a fact that slavery was part of Fort Snelling's life early in its history. This center must also then be a welcoming place for all Minnesotans past, present, and future, which in my opinion it is not now, so that we can fully explore that and document, record for future history and for the different societies that will come that we do value history and whatever history they will present. We need to value it as a destination in Minnesota and learn in a conducive environment to better understand who we are today and why we value and why we can learn from where Minnesota actually started. So I urge this committee and Chair Erdahl's bill to look favorably upon this request. Thank you.
Thank you, General Nash.
Thank you,
Representative Erdahl, do you have other testifiers?
I don't think so.
Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to this bill? Any questions, members? Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. Would you, and maybe your other folks here, would share with us how you are including the Native American history in this new project? You know, they were, our Ojibwe communities were here long before white men stepped on, and before them the Dakota. And would you tell us a little bit about how maybe you worked with our indigenous communities here in Minnesota, and then how they are also going to be an important part of this renovation?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. It's a good one. This has been a little bit of a challenge in the project because, especially for Dakota people, it's both a sacred place and a difficult site. And as we began working on this project some years ago and began talking with our Indian Advisory Council, which is composed of representatives appointed by tribal councils in the 11 federally recognized tribes, we had a lot of conversations about how we could move forward in planning the project and how Native people could be involved. And I'm sorry to say that we had a fourth speaker today. She was here yesterday for Representative Erdahl's Capital Investment Committee, Lana Hunter, from our Dakota Community Council, who really speaks to that very point. As we talked with our Indian Advisory Council about this project about 3 years ago at a meeting, that we had been talking for a couple of years about how difficult it was to engage in it, one of the Dakota members of the council quietly stood and folded her hands and said, you know, this is, after all, Dakota homeland, and this is an educational opportunity that perhaps we should embrace. Another gentleman who was visiting from South Dakota, a tribe, stood and said, you know, when I visit the Twin Cities, or if I have a relative in the hospital receiving Medicare in the Twin Cities, I wish I could go to Fort Snelling to pray, or that we could have ceremony at Fort Snelling. And from that point, several years ago, the participation has opened up and picked up to where over a year ago a group called the Dakota Community Council has embraced the opportunities there and worked with us to think about how that story can be told, for example, on the landscape, so that when people come, they are aware that there are lots of stories there, including the presence of humans for millennia, including Ojibwe and Dakota people, the Native people of Minnesota. And that has been one of the many close working relationships that we've developed on this project. We've been working with African-American community on the slavery story and the Dred Scott story, with the Japanese American Citizens League on their story, with veteran community, because so many soldiers went to conflict through Fort Snelling. So really the project as you see it today is the result of not just what we've done, but the result of lots of partnerships, including the Native American people of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Elliott. Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you for including all of those folks, all those groups in the process of this renovation. And I guess I would just ask and hope that as time goes by and history comes to light, that there's opportunities to add to the rich history of Minnesota, especially at Fort Snelling and Bidote. Thank you.
Representative Q.
Thank you, Madam Chair, woman, and thank you to Chair Erdahl for bringing this bill and to all the testifiers who are here. It's no surprise to Chair Erdahl and I think many in this room to know that I've been a huge supporter of this project of Fort Snelling. In fact, when the testifier, Ms. Adkins, regretted having forgotten her button, well, I did the same thing, but I have them in every colorway up in my office, and so I sent my legislative assistant up and had her come down to put on my orange button. So anyway, I think that this project is analogous to the refurbishment of the People's House of the Capitol. You know, the 300 some million dollars that we spent, investing in the refurbishment of the Capitol is very much like what we're proposing to do here, to ensure the preservation of Fort Snelling for all of the people of Minnesota. And I wish that this bill could be traveling on its own and just receive an up or down vote right on its own, rather than become a part of this, potentially a part of this big omnibus bill. But I'm probably not optimistic that that'll happen. And I just want to welcome back General Nash. Wonderful to see you again. I've been an active member of the Fort Snelling Veterans Memorial Chapel for some time, and so I have the opportunity almost every week to, see all these buildings and the refurbishment, and I've also attended a number of events in the old center. So it definitely is, something that needs to happen. I'm concerned about, I haven't had a concern about this. I've been really about this project, but a number of us, and I don't know how many on our committee received this, but a number of members received an email from a Minnesotan last night who's just expressing concern about wanting to ensure that, and I just want to read this, but to it, and I want to preface this by saying that, the personal connections that so many Minnesotans have with Fort Snelling are primarily, military, for the most part. And so this Minnesotan wrote, and it just concerned me. She said, I'm an average Minnesotan who loves veterans, descends from veterans, decorates local graves with her local American Legion, and donates handmade cards to veterans living at several assisted living communities, and visits Fort Snelling National Cemetery in honor of family and friends who were veterans, and even visited Mom at a base near Fort Snelling as a little girl. I've read the writing on the signs and at Fort Snelling and in the current design. And she goes on to express a further concern. Don't know if you've received any feedback like this, but wanting to ensure she feels, and I've heard this feedback from others, but not in as pronounced a way as we received in this email, that she feels that the significance of the military history, which is obvious, of Fort Snelling is being minimized in some way relative to all of the other considerations of the design or whatever. And I just wanted to make a point that that the military influence can't be denied, and I would love to receive assurance, not right here and right now, but I would love another look at all of what is being considered so that I have assurance that what this is going to look like going forward.
Mr. Elliott.
May I please? Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Pugh. Well, I will give you that assurance right here, right now, that is a mischaracterization. Actually, we are expanding the military history that will be told at the fort from early 19th century through the mid-20th century. That enables us to talk about hundreds of thousands of more people who served and the sacrifices their families made. So we are actually expanding that story yes, we are adding more stories to the stories that will be told, but you can't not have a focus on the military at Fort Snelling. So I think it's a misunderstanding. It's certainly a mischaracterization. And I have no hesitation in assuring you about that right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I really don't have another follow-up. I'll just look forward to reading all of this material that you've provided for us.
If I may, Madam Chair, Representative Pugh, I might say, I think if there were merit to that point, we wouldn't have the support of all the veterans groups that we have, including the American Legion and others. So I think that the project has earned that support.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and also Representative Erdahl and also Mr. Elliott. Thank you for the work that you're doing. And I know I got an important phone call about 2 years ago from a person that most of us know, and that's General Vesey. And General Vesey, who was the chairman of chief of staff under the Reagan administration, he was making phone calls to apparently legislators to support what we're trying to do with Fort Snelling. And when I asked, well, who is this? And was General Vesey. Oh, okay, I guess I'll listen. And just a great man. He's done so much for the state of Minnesota and also for our country, and then passed away shortly after that. So, but thank you for bringing it, Chair Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, I wish you were still here to be making phone calls this year.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl and Mr. Elliott. One question I always ask, I remember this coming through committee, I believe, last session, and I look at the pictures, and the question that I asked regarding the Capitol as well is, why is it that we let our most precious historical places get so far gone to where, the cost is so high to redo them or get them up? And the Capitol is absolutely gorgeous, and it was worth every penny. But my question today is, and I will support this project because I think preserving Fort Snelling is most important. But once you get the money and you do the construction, the building, restoring the historical other places, what's the plan to make sure that it doesn't get so far gone that you're back here way down the road needing more money?
Mr. Elliott.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a very good question. First, let me assure you that the fort itself is in good condition. We have prioritized maintaining both the five original sections of the fort and the reconstructed portions of the fort. And I think if you visit Fort Snelling, you would feel assured by that. There are at this site several other structures that have been vacant for many years, since the Veterans Administration stopped using them as for clinic purposes and others. The best way to preserve a building is to give it a use. And so that's what we're doing with two of those structures in this scheme. We're giving them a use as orientation and visitor service facilities. That asset, significant asset preservation, is a big step forward for those structures at the fort. And I think it's a wise thing to move away from the underground visitor center that was built in the 70s. The damage that you see in those photographs has been caused by chronic water penetration, and we've had building experts out there underground buildings were all the rage after the energy crisis in the 70s, and we've had experts out there to look at what we could do to stop the water penetration, and to a person they have said, you're not going to be able to stop the water penetration there. All you can do is continue to spend money to ameliorate the effects of that water on the structure. It's a modern structure. It's had nearly 50 years of use. And I think the wise thing to do is to step away from that and now invest in making use of the historic structures that are there to preserve, that need a reason to be preserved.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you. Once you restore and build everything in your plans here, then how do you plan to help with maintenance and upkeep of these structures going forward?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a function of our asset preservation requests each year. And as I mentioned in the overview, on the 26 historic sites, there are 154 buildings, and we have a list of the needs on all those structures that we're constantly triaging, and we're tackling the maintenance projects on those structures in accordance with the asset preservation money that we receive.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Erdahl.
I'll answer a little bit more on that question. The state capitol to a larger extent and the in Fort Snelling to a smaller extent has a problem of not having such a natural constituency. The legislature has to become the advocate for the state capitol. There's no paid lobbyist for the state capitol. At least Fort Snelling does have a more identified advocacy group in the State Historical Society. But just to let you know about the Capitol, and I'm concerned about the maintenance of it in the future. And just last week, the Preservation Commission met once again, and one of the options for the future of the commission brought up last week was to disband, because the Capitol has been restored. We don't need it anymore. But I've raised the point then that then we would simply be like we were before we restored the Capitol, depending upon the legislature or, the legislature to do whatever maintenance needed to be done. And you see how that worked out. We wound up with a huge problem. And so commission is going to continue in existence, not meeting often, maybe just once or twice a year, to deal with the request for maintenance. So a little better future, I think, for the Capitol.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Lilly, and we're going to have to keep moving. So
okay, briefly. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Chair Erdahl, I just want to thank you for bringing this forward. I'm lucky enough to serve on your committee, and Representative Detmer's on the committee, and Vice Chair Ugalem there back in the corner. And I think we lost Vogel, though. Vogel was on the committee, but he's off of it now or something. But I thought it was one of the best stops that we had on the whole tours that we've seen. It is quite powerful. I appreciate the questions, and I thought getting into the room where the Dred Scott family was thought to have been through at their time in Minnesota, I thought was very powerful addition and a capture of Minnesota history, and so I thought that was amazing. I'm glad you mentioned in the question that was asked about this the building and how bad they are. We found on a lot of these trips how bad the buildings were in the 70s. It was just kind of a weak spot. It's not just you alone. There's a major epidemic all over the state, like on our college campuses, of just horrible buildings that were built in the 70s. But that's basically it. A great project. Thank you for bringing it forward. But Representative Erdahl, if we wanted to learn any more, is there any books we could buy?
Well, I think, thank you for that question, Representative Lilly. And there probably are some with the Historical Society that would be interesting to people.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just briefly, I want to thank Chair Erdahl for bringing this project forward. Some of my earliest memories are of visiting the Fort Snelling, and just has fond memories for me, and I think it's a wonderful asset that we have for the state. So thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you.
Closing comments, Representative
Erdahl? I think we've had a good discussion, and, you know, appreciate the opportunity to do this and to more fully explain to the people of Minnesota why this is needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson renews her motion to re-refer House File 3579 to the Capital Investment Committee without recommendation. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried.
I'll get to make a recommendation.
Yeah, you okay. Next, we have House File 3007.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'll move House File 3007 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Welcome to the committee, Representative Kresha.
Thank you, and welcome to the chair, Representative Ward.
Representative Kresha, would you like to present your bill?
I would. Madam Chair, committee members, this is a bill which seeks state matching funds for a project of regional significance to my area. The Long Prairie community, including CentraCare, which is a primary health care provider, and a number of community organizations are seeking to establish a well-being center to serve a broad area surrounding the city of Long Prairie. If you've been in my area and you've been in Todd County, you know that Long Prairie is the regional center for a very sparse area of Todd County, and it's where people will travel to get their needs met. A significant majority of support for this project will come from the community itself. CentraCare is making a major capital contribution. We've had good success in finding some generous donors, and there's a community campaign underway as well. In the final analysis, we expect that there will be at least two non-state dollars for every dollar of state money that goes into this project. I have with me Dan Swenson, CentraCare Health Long Prairie Administrator, who can provide more information about the community process that took place to bring this project forward. And with that, I'd like to introduce my testifier.
Welcome to the committee. Would you state your name and your position, please?
Good afternoon. I'm Dan Swenson, Administrator of CentraCare Health Long Prairie. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time and the opportunity to provide additional comments related to the funding request to support the Regional Well-Being Center in Long Prairie, Minnesota. In response to pressing needs voiced by community members, CentraCare Health Long Prairie is leading the effort to secure capital funding for the construction of a regional community well-being center that will exist to provide programs and services designed to promote healthy lifestyles, enhance quality of life, support well-being through the six dimensions of wellness, which are occupational, physical, social, intellectual, spiritual, and emotional, for all who live and work in the region. It is important to note, this project is truly championed by community members, desiring access to a nearby facility where they can be active and interact with healthcare providers. Today, only 33% of Todd County residents report access to exercise opportunities. This compares to the state average of 84% access. Throughout the past 5 years, we have been working with regional partners and community members to define, frame, and carry out this project in order to provide the best possible solution to the health and well-being issues faced by our region. This project and our team of stakeholders embodies the spirit of rural optimism that is critical to keeping our community healthy, successful, and deeply inclusive, bringing our diverse community members together to provide opportunities for growth and betterment for all. A market analysis was completed along with a feasibility study and hundreds of meetings with community members to gain input for the priorities of this project. The 12,000 square foot facility, positioned as a shared use community center that many regional organizations will utilize and provide programming and services within. The main amenities of the space are community and outpatient physical therapy gym with cardio and weight equipment, community and outpatient physical therapy pool, which would be a warm water for therapy and community water aerobic classes, a demonstration wellness kitchen for nutritional education opportunities and socialization space, a fitness studio, which is a multi-use space for fitness classes and support group meetings. The Regional Community Wellbeing Center project is designated as one of the vital projects in Region 5 by the Region 5 Development Commission's Strategy Committee. This project was recognized as an initiative that has regional significance and possesses multi-jurisdictional, multi-agency benefits. The Regional Community Wellbeing Center will provide preventive health care access for all who live, work, and play within our region. Primary impact is 35,000 residents living within 20 miles of Long Prairie throughout rural Todd County, Minnesota. This is a local collaborative project with many partner organizations providing input from concept through design to benefit our community. The partners involved in the development project, we have a whole host of about 20 different community partners that we're working with on this project. Our focus is to create a healthy rural community with special attention on our aging population, low-income individuals, and those with disabilities, mental health, and preventable chronic health conditions. The economic impact in our region will be significant by further enhancing community collaboration, culture cohesion, and creating appealing amenities that currently isn't available, which will benefit workforce recruitment and retention for all regional businesses. There's a significant opportunity for enhancing the lifestyles of those who live, work, and play in the region. Our need for intervention into the wellness of the community is immediate, as we face significant issues including economic depression, lack of services for the diverse population, and isolation among the population. Todd County ranks poorly in statewide studies for healthcare factors related to chronic conditions and preventable health conditions. For example, the occurrence of diabetes is 13.1% in Todd County compared to the state average of 7.3%. Prevalence of heart disease in Todd County is 36.3% compared to the state average of 26.3%. In collaboration with our many regional partners, we are dedicated to lead this population health and holistic wellness effort to build a center that will address pressing community needs and local disparities in access to programs and services. This is why it is crucial we leverage a holistic approach that provides opportunities for all areas of wellness within our facility. Economic health, physical health, and emotional health are all needed for happy, healthy, and contributing members of our community. Access to high-quality well-being services and programming close to home is not just a convenience, but a necessity for our regional residents. The population of Todd County is one of the most aged, impoverished, and diverse populations in the state of Minnesota. According to the U.S. Census, 18.8% of Todd County's current population is over age 65, compared to 13.9% in the remainder of the state. By 2030, the population of residents over age 65 is expected to grow to 28.7% in Todd County, compared to 19.1% in Minnesota. Individuals in poverty living in Todd County comprise 14.7% of the population compared to the state's average of 11.3%. Todd County is the fifth poorest county in the state of Minnesota. Further within the city limits of Long Prairie specifically, Hispanic Latino population has increased from 9.38% in 2000 to 29.9% in the 2010 U.S. Census. This project will be a model for other rural communities, demonstrating how to incorporate shared community use within healthcare facilities. To date, over $1.8 million has been secured from individuals, organizations, foundations that have committed to this project. This is significant testimony to the importance of this project. Regional community members have been the ones to contribute to this project. In addition, Central Care Health is investing $1.3 million to this project. So in all, over $3.1 million has been secured for this project. And conversations continue with all of our donors. If funding is secured, construction would begin in July of 2018 with the expected completion in the spring of 2019. This project is vitally important to the physical and mental health and overall well-being of residents throughout our region in rural Todd County, Minnesota. So on behalf of the residents of rural Minnesota who live throughout and around Todd County, we are respectfully requesting state matching funds to further support this project. For every dollar from the state of Minnesota, there will be about $2.80 contributed from other sources. So we are only requesting 35% of this project to come from state funds. So we appreciate your support of this bill and request your recommendations to the House Capital Investment Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson. Representative Kreshaw, are there other testifiers?
I do not have any more, Madam Chair.
Does anyone else wish to testify on this bill? Members, are there questions? Representative Hugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kreshaw, for bringing this bill. I have a question, a clarifying question. If I'm not mistaken, I just heard that $1.8 million has been raised so far.
Yep.
Maybe this question is more for the testifier. But I see, looking at your handout, that the campaign for the community is to generate $2 million, the foundations and grants $1.2 million, so you'll need $3.2 million, and you're at $1.8. So I'm wondering how long it's taken for you to get to the $1.8 and what your plan is to get to the $3.2.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. We had started this capital campaign about 5 months ago for this project, so 5 months into it, we had raised the $1.8 million. And as we are continuing to cultivate relationships with potential donors and meeting with the donors within the community and outside of the community to raise that additional $1.3 million that we're seeking. And our goal is to have that completed by the end of May.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. And so that sounds like in 5 months' time that you've raised 1.8, so you're on a roll, but here it is, March.
Yep.
And I thought I heard you say that this project, you want this to be underway in July. So I'm wondering what the contingency plan would look like. Have you not secured the resources that you need by the time that you need to make the commitment?
Mr. Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Our contingency plan would be we would either go back to the drawing board and look at reducing the scope of the project or else delaying the start date and do a phase, whether we phase it or start the project as fundraising continues. One of the things that we are concerned about is when you break ground on a project, fundraising usually comes to a halt because they'll think that you already have the funds secured. So that is a concern of ours. So we are looking at a phased approach or reducing the scope of the project.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kunesh-Padin, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is for the testifier, please. You were able to raise a lot of money in a short amount of time. Can you give me some examples of who your donors are?
Mr. Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. They are community members. We have donations anywhere from a dollar up to our largest gift of $500,000, which was an anonymous gift from a community members. We are meeting with the large businesses in the community that have been very generous to this Wellness Wins campaign. So we're meeting with all individuals and members and the business community within Long Prairie and the greater Todd County community.
Another question. So will you have an affiliation with any medical or health care organization that will oversee this whole plan?
Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Yes, this project would be overseen and ran and operated by Central Care Health, Long Prairie. So it would be connected to our new medical campus that we just opened up in October of 2017. So that's where we'd have the multi-purpose, where we'd have physicians, we'd have physical therapists and other medical professionals that would oversee not only the patients, but the members that are coming in to work out and participate in the activities within the Health and Wellbeing Center.
And then one more follow-up question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Given that it's been difficult, we've heard for rural communities to attract medical personnel, doctors, dentists, that sort of thing. And we hear about clinics all over Minnesota, smaller clinics being closed down and kind of created solid area of medical attention. Do you either think that there will be an issue with attracting the medical personnel you need to have here in this healthy community, or is this something that you think will actually attract folks?
Mr. Swenson, our representative.
If I could, is it okay, Ben? Thank you, Representative Kinesh, putting in a great question. The reason I want to take this is because the answer is yes. In all of our areas, it is difficult to attract the medical staff. But the reason I wanted to also field this as well is Long Prairie has spent a lot of time with broadband. We've also been trying to find other ways of upgrading our schools to make this more attractive. So the answer is absolutely, and it's very difficult. Just north of us in the Staples area, they have a huge central care center that's going up, and they continue to expand in Little Falls. So there's lots of regional competition for rural medical staff. But the reason I chose this project over some of the other ones is because the new facility they have with the broadband push and the turnover of generations and the donations that you hear are really an older generation turning this over to a younger generation. And I think all the conditions are right to keep this going, and we have a nice infuse of Hispanics who are doing just wonderful work, and they're building the community up as well. So all the conditions are right to, I really believe, bring Long Prairie up, and that's why I think this is going to be so helpful for that, as well as I'm hoping to attract medical professionals and professionals in general that will fit the new population that's changing. So all the conditions appear to be right, but what you state is right on. That will be a challenge.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a good bill, and I like what it does for the community. That's wonderful. My question just is around the funding source here. This is from the general fund to be given to the Commissioner of Admin. So my question is just how would it be more appropriate to pursue bond funds for this?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
To that point, and I was going to actually recommend that we change that around. I think the reason why that it's to the general fund is because it's going not to the city. Is that correct, Ms. Dyson?
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, that's my understanding, that this is a direct grant to a,
correct.
I don't know if it's a nonprofit. I'm assuming it's a nonprofit healthcare organization and therefore would not be eligible for state general obligation bonds. But capital projects can be funded from other sources, the general fund, and we have done that in the past if that is what the legislature decides to do. But it would not be eligible for GO.
And
Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, and to Representative Olson's point and Representative Kreisha, I don't know if you guys are opposed to that. If we gave it to the city of Long Prairie with the intent of it going to the central health care system, because then you would be eligible for bonding dollars. And just a thought on that piece.
Representative Kreisha.
I'm a yes and person. I would not be opposed to that.
Okay. And Ms. Dyson? Or does that not work? Or did I say it wrong?
Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Sorry. Sorry.
Not wrong. Just I wanted to add the clarification that the GO bonds going to the city, that would mean that the city then would have to own the facility and have legal authority to operate the programs within it. They could then enter into a lease management agreement with the nonprofit, but the city would have to actually own it and have authority to run the programs.
Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, so if this does proceed as out of the general fund, would this be coming out of our target for state government finance?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, we're referring this to the Capital Investment Committee, so that will give Representative Kreisha some time to change it over if he so desires. Otherwise, since it would be going to the Capital Investment mm-hmm. Committee, sometimes they do have general fund dollars as part of their bill, so they could potentially take it out of that as well. So there's a couple of options, but it would not be out of our target, no.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there other questions? Oh, Representative
Yeah, Zimmer. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just looking over the materials, it goes into the physical therapy and so forth. Is there anything dealing like PTSD or anything like that in the psychological areas?
Mr. Swenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Not in this building specifically. We do have in one of our other buildings where we have mental health, and that would be completed in that building unless they need additional therapy, whether it's occupational or physical therapy, then they would be referred to this building.
Okay, thank you.
Are there other questions? Representative Anderson renews her motion to re-refer 3007 to the Capital Investment Committee without recommendation. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Krishan. Representative Miller, House File 3106. Representative Miller, welcome to your committee. I am going to move that House File 3106 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation. With that, if you can
Madam Chair,
give us a brief description of your bill, and then we'll take questions at that point after you have the bill.
Madam Chair, mine is to the motion for referral. Can I amend the motion to have it be referred to public safety, and could I have a roll call on that?
You can, and we'll do that as we close up the bill. You can make your own motion, but right now we're just going to take through the bill. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yep.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of this committee. My bill is to purchase or to secure general obligation bonds to purchase the Prairie Correctional Facility in Appleton and pay for facility upgrades for a maximum of $139 million. Pending facility appraisal and purchase agreement. This is based off of a study that was done in this last year, and those were the recommendations as to cost, but there's not an assumption of how much the purchase of the building is until we have an appraisal, so that may go down from there. There's also another option to lease to own that we've presented in the past and will certainly be presented forward, which would also kind of adjust exactly what we're trying to do forward here. But the real intent is to facilitate the purchase of it or the ownership by the state of Minnesota. There's been a great deal of discussion around a myriad of issues regarding the Minnesota Department of Corrections using these facilities, including sentencing reform, social justice, private prisons in Minnesota, union versus non-union. In the end, this project is very clear and simple. The state of Minnesota, according to the Department of Corrections, has a prison population problem that is going to grow. Prairie Correctional Facilities can address that problem now and in the future when they need those services. I want to refer to some supporting documents that I've handed out for the sake of brevity, Madam Chair. I'm not going to go through those. They're for your reading, but please take note. The top one says Appleton option on it, and it gives that determination that I said that fundamentally Minnesota has a prison population problem, and we have an asset which can resolve that. There's a timeline in that. A lot of the discussion surrounding this has had sort of a fact versus fiction thing. May come up in some questions today that I'm more than happy to resolve those where I can. But we do believe that this is a straightforward option. And one thing that I made clear to the Department of Corrections last year is we're not asking them to open or to purchase and to open a prison. What we're saying is when it's such time that they need to expand their facilities, that they do so with the Appleton option. If they do not have that need at any time in the future, then we understand that. So with that, I'm going to I have my first testifier here. I'm going to let him go ahead and proceed forward.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Madam Chair, my name is Gary Hendricks, Swift County Commissioner, resident of Appleton. Appleton is within my district. We support House File 3106. We feel we have the regional support. We have documentation that indicates that we have 25 counties and communities that are in support of reopening the prison. We believe overall that the state has an overcrowding issue. We see that within the Department of Corrections' own information, and that we believe that the prison or the jails, the county jails, are not the facilities in which they should be housed. We feel a prison overall will add the programming, rehab services that is essential for these individuals once they go out and are completed with their sentencing and can become more active and supportive citizens of Minnesota. We have as Representative Miller has stated, a pre-existing building. It's already there. It's been in operational before, and it's ready to go with a, we don't know how much, but changes will have to be facilitated, but it's basically in very good shape. And overall, for the future of our communities, the stability of Western Minnesota, we are looking for the jobs that would be created and the good-paying jobs that are offered through the prison system and the Department of Corrections. So we are advocating for the state to purchase the facility, and we could have a long relationship for years to come. Thank you.
And Representative Miller, do you have other testifiers that wish to testify?
Madam Chair, I do not have other testifiers, but I believe that there are other testifiers listed.
I see that. I just have a question for Commissioner Hendricks. You talk about the jobs. What is the estimate of the number of jobs?
Madam Chair, I can answer that.
Representative Miller.
The answer is fluid in the sense that it depends on how many inmates may be populated. It's up to 1,600 beds. The general assumption is with the amount of population that would go in there would be about 300 up to, I know the Department of Corrections has listed that it would be 500 full-time positions that would be out there. That's with a capacity prison of 1,600 inmates in it. So 300 to 500 is the answer.
And Representative Miller, what's the population of Appleton?
The population of Appleton right now is about 1,400 is what I was going to say, yes.
Great.
And if I could add on to that, that that's why we have a number of communities and counties. When it was open, there was well over 300 people working there, and it drew from a large geographic area. Traveling in our area, the traffic is very light. So does not if you're talking about 10 miles, it takes you 10 minutes to get there.
And Madam Chair, if I could
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to support that. And this is in your kind of fact versus fiction. Sometimes the labor market there has been put into question by the Department of Corrections. The Department of Employment and Economic Development actually did a study, I believe it was in 2016, that they determined there was sufficient labor market out there to sustain opening this.
Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner. And just don't go anywhere. Well, I know it's a long drive back home, so you're not going to go too soon, but I appreciate your testimony. I have first on my list, Janae Bates. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent. And I'm just going to tell this to everybody. We do end committee at 2:45, so if you can be considerate of the people behind you, okay? And if you have written testimony, you don't need to read it. you can provide to that committee, and we'll disseminate that to everybody. If you could just kind of speak from your heart, that would be helpful.
Sure.
Ms. Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Hello, my name is Minister Janae Bates, and I am here representing Isaiah as well as my faith values, and I will be brief. Today we are having an economic and financial conversation about adding human cages to our community. As a minister from the Christian faith tradition, I believe I had a bit of wisdom to add to this conversation. In the book of Luke, chapter 4, Jesus announces his ministry and what I would also consider to be his political and economic plan. He says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because God has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering sight to the blind, to set liberty to those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." The prison industrial complex is a term we use to describe the overlapping interests of government and industry that use surveillance, policing, and imprisonment as solutions to our economic, social, and political problems. The prison industrial complex and mass incarceration are great descriptor words in making it clear that this is a system and it's institutional. However, it does not make it clear that every person in this room, in this city, and in this state has a role and responsibility to it. Citizens and politicians bear the moral burden of creating the system and the damaging and surveilling detention of Americans, especially those in communities of color. Bad policies and decisions are made in boardrooms, courtrooms, and rooms just like this every single day, and they have created these oppressive and racially oppressive systems, which also means that we have a role and a responsibility to fix it. There is a possible way to fix it. And so if we, as members of this board, decide to purchase human cages, you are putting a face on the elusive prison industrial complex. It will not only have a face, but a place to dwell and wreak havoc in our great state of Minnesota. Do you want to carry that weight, that burden, that responsibility, or that shame? I don't think you do. But we do know that our financial decisions also have human consequences. So how far are we willing to go for a few dollars, a couple of fluid jobs? How far are we willing to go to separate parents from their children, spouses from their partners, entire communities without their people? And so we need you to stand by us, the people, in challenging the belief that caging and controlling people is what makes us safe. Together we can envision and create a social and economic order that does not only rely on sequestering people in deadfall places designed to separate them from their communities and families. All of our efforts and resources, financial and otherwise, should be used to educate, assist, and empower our communities within the context of eliminating human cages as our mainstream livelihood. And so today, let us be like Jesus, proclaiming the good news to the poor, proclaiming liberty to the captives, and setting liberty to those who are oppressed. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Kinney. I know. So for folks that are in the audience, I would ask that you refrain from clapping because that is not how we operate committees. So please be respectful of the institution. If there are issues with that, I can have somebody that will have a conversation with you about that. Okay? So we have Mr. Hall and then Mr. Alvarez after that. And folks, we have 30 minutes left. If each of the people that are left on the list take 5 minutes, we will be at 40 minutes. So whoever's at the end of the line, their time will be minimized because of the people before them. So for those that get to be first, please be respectful of the people behind you. Be brief. Okay? Mr. Hall, please.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Max Hall. I'm a legislative representative with AFSCME Council 5. We represent approximately 43,000 state, county, and city employees who work and live throughout the state, and including roughly 2,000 correctional officers. As you are aware, House File 3106 is a proposal that would allow the state of Minnesota to purchase and make upgrades to the Appleton, private prison facility, the mothballed prison in Appleton, Minnesota. It appropriates up to $74.1 million to actually purchase the facility and would allow for the remaining amount to be used for capital improvement projects on the location. So a couple of things that the bonding proceeds would be used for is to be in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and, of course, the American Corrections Association's standards for prison facilities. So our members have taken a firm position that leasing the facility or engaging in any way with CoreCivic in those regards is something that we do not support. We're happy that this bill does not engage in a lease. However, we would hope that other options that the Department of Corrections, that Governor Dayton and others have provided to actually deal with the inmate population, the prison population issue. So our correctional officers believe and have strongly supported the issue that Representative Miller has brought forward in terms of sentencing reform and other issues. Sorry. So we repeatedly come to the legislature, us and our members, asking for funding for our current facilities located across the state in terms of increased staffing to ensure inmate and staff safety. Additional bonding projects to rehabilitate and expand upon our existing facilities, and projects that expand bed space at our current facilities, which comes at a much smaller cost than the proposal that's in front of you today. So I will turn over the microphone out of respect for you, Madam Chair, and the time to Sergeant Rick Nyson.
Welcome to the committee. If you can please be brief.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sergeant Rick Nyson. I'm a proud AFSCME member. I've been a employee of the Department of Corrections for 25 years. I work in a cell hall in the St. Cloud prison that houses 174 offenders. I'd again like to thank you for allowing me to talk on House File 3106. It is a bill that AFSCME has many concerns about. As a correctional officer, I have firsthand knowledge of our current facilities and how short-staffed and the strain that the Department of Corrections has concerning their budget. Purchasing a prison that is located 3 miles west or 3 hours west of the Twin Cities would have many negative results for the staff and the inmate population and their families alike. I want to highlight quick three concerns. One, being so far away, it would dramatically increase the time in which our special operations response groups and our special operations response teams would take to get there to potential riot and violent outbursts in the prison. The other part is the availability of mutual aid in that area. I was part of a uprising in St. Cloud back in the mid-90s where we lost control of one of our recreation areas. 64 offenders took it over. And before I got there, and I lived 10 minutes away, the St. Cloud Police Department had many squads there, and they were giving us support on our perimeter. I question the availability in that area of that type of mutual aid support, especially when you're looking at upwards of 1,600 people. The other thing is staffing. Right now, we have come, we being the Department of Corrections and AFSCME, with the requests for CO funding. We have not always got that support, and I'm just curious exactly where the money for 500 plus more people are going to come from. We do have some, we need to look at this at its totality. It's not a purchase and the problem is solved. We have to look at the $50 million price tag, the biennium for operating costs that will continue to be a cost. And at this point, we can look at sentencing reform measures, and I would urge you to support Governor Dayton's and the Department of Corrections bonding proposal that would increase our bed space of over 100 beds with a fraction of the price of this proposal. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. All right. I have Ms. Alvarez, and the next testifier is Lopez, Labad, English, Shosh. So if you can kind of get queued up so that we can. Yes, please. Yep, no, that's fine. That is wonderful. Thank you. And welcome to the committee. And if you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Yes, my name is Antonia Alvarez. I'm co-founder Asamblea de Derechos Civiles. I'm coming from the Church Encarnación in Minneapolis. And I'm organizer with the Latino community for 18 years in Minnesota. Hoy estoy aquí.
Today I am here.
Porque quiero decirles que la sociedad necesita.
Because I want to let you know that society needs.
Más educadores que criminales.
More educators than criminals.
Se me hace inaudito.
I think it's unacceptable.
Ayer estamos luchando por más fondos para dar educación a nuestros niños.
Yesterday we were fighting to get more funds for our children.
Y hoy estoy aquí denunciando que quieren invertir millones de dólares para una prisión.
And today I am here denouncing that you want to invest millions in a prison.
Vengo de México.
I come from Mexico.
Y en México se piensa que los Estados Unidos y sus políticos son muy humanitarios.
And in Mexico we believe that U.S. politicians and the country itself is humanitarian.
En estos momentos, la sociedad en general en los Estados Unidos.
In these moments, the general society in the United States.
Principalmente los inmigrantes indocumentados.
Primarily undocumented immigrants.
Sentimos que la fabricación de prisiones.
Feel that the opening of prisons.
Son centros de concentración como los tenía Hitler en Alemania.
Are concentration camps like the ones that Hitler had in Germany.
Las corporaciones nos miran como una fábrica de dinero.
Corporations look at us like money factories.
Nosotros somos seres humanos.
We are humans.
Nosotros queremos ser reconocidos en la sociedad.
We want to be recognized in society.
Nosotros somos trabajadores de este estado.
We are workers of this state.
Nosotros limpiamos sus oficinas.
We clean your offices.
Limpiamos sus casas.
We clean your homes.
Limpiamos sus yardas.
We clean your yards.
Reparamos sus techos.
We fix your roofs.
Y muchas veces.
And many times.
Nos meten a las prisiones injustamente.
You unjustly put us in prisons.
No es posible que esté pasando esto.
It is not possible that this is happening.
Todos los que estamos aquí.
Everyone who is here.
Y ustedes.
And including yourselves.
Estamos aquí por un propósito.
Are here for a purpose.
Y el propósito de todos es reconocer la dignidad de los seres humanos.
And the purpose of everybody here is to recognize everybody's humanity.
Si permitimos que fabriquen prisiones,
if we allow them to continue opening prisons,
van a venir por mí.
They're going to come after me.
Y estoy clara de eso.
And I'm very clear on that.
Pero cuando se acaben los míos,
but when my people are done with,
van a venir por los hijos de ustedes.
They're going to come after your children too.
Porque las corporaciones son ambiciosas.
Because corporations are greedy and ambitious.
Y no están mirando la dignidad de las personas.
And they are not recognizing people's dignity.
Quiero pedirles, por favor.
I want to ask you, please.
Antes de que ustedes decidan.
Before you make a decision.
En favor de una prisión.
In favor of a prison.
Piensen un momento en sus familias.
Think for a moment about your families.
Y en un acto de amor.
And in an act of love.
Voten.
Vote.
Por lo que ustedes desean.
For what you wish.
Para sus familias y la sociedad.
For your families and for society.
Porque el Señor va a estar con ustedes.
Because the Lord will be with you.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have Lopez, Lavad, English, and what I'm going to do in order to make sure that we have enough time for questions, you have 2 minutes. After the 2 minutes, I will ask you to submit your further comments in writing, and we will disseminate that to the rest of the committee.
Absolutely.
So welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent. And it's 2 minutes, and you'll get a warning of 1 minute from one of these guys. Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Luz Lopez. I am an organizer with Asamblea de Derechos Civiles, and I am here today because I'm here to echo the concerns of our co-founder as well. I'm very concerned that there's going to be this prison that is going to be opening. I understand that this prison is not supposed to be used for private reasons under a Republican governor, but I've worked closely with the Stearns County Sheriff's Department, and I have found that in the surrounding areas of St. Cloud, folks are being funneled to ICE. They are being stopped. They're being racially profiled, detained for ICE, and then deported. So the fact that the argument is that it won't be used for that reason, I frankly do not believe. Again, we're going to be spending $139 million on this, and I think that it could be used elsewhere. We could put it into after-school programs. I know that they have been cutting after-school programs. They have been reducing hours in schools.
Ms. Lopez?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask that you submit the remainder of your comments to the committee. I apologize. It's just the reality of the people that we have on the list, and we have I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to speak.
Absolutely.
Are you good with that?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm probably saying this name wrong, and I apologize. Ms. Levad or Levad. And 2 minutes.
My name is Amy Levad. I'm a professor at the University of Thomas, St. Thomas, specializing in the ethics of criminal justice. I've written and researched about these issues for nearly 20 years and been participating in conversations around this particular move to reopen a Prairie Correctional Facility for the last 2 years. And I want to start with a quotation. At first, we thought if we built it, then they would come. But what we've learned is that some of the prison employees come to work here but not to live here. This quotation is from a county commissioner in a town that opened a prison with hopes of stimulating its economy with new jobs, more workers, and local multipliers as people hired by the prison shopped at local butchers, restaurants, and hardware stores. His comments lament that this plan didn't work out. The prison did not generate the economic stimulus that he thought would save his town and neighbors. He goes on to say that the prison has yet to, quote, I find the wording ironic, capture the employees yet, leading to a high turnover rate. The irony is that this commissioner testified first today. It was a quotation from a 2002 article in Economic Development Digest titled, Does Crime Pay? Pros and Cons of Rural Prisons? And the speaker was Commissioner Gary Hendricks. It is tragic that the citizens of Appleton and Swift County have forgotten this hard-learned lesson. I fear that they will learn it again if the prison reopens, because it is a lesson learned by rural communities across the country that turned to prisons in the 1990s and 2000s as a means of economic development. Numerous evidence-based, peer-reviewed studies of the economic effects of opening prisons demonstrate that they harm rural communities, that there are not the multiplier effects that are expected, that employment doesn't pan out because most of the jobs are dictated by union rules related to seniority, and most of the people employed in newly opened prisons are out-of-county residents.
Ms. Levon, I apologize. The time is up, and I need to make sure that we have the other people have a chance to give their testimony. If you can provide the remainder.
I will have all of the peer-reviewed articles sent to each and every one of you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Ms. Levad. Ms. English. Welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Rachel English. I am a community organizer with Jewish Community Action. JCA is a faith-based community organization that seeks to make sure our strong moral values are reflected in the policies and procedures of our state. Acquiring a new prison is not within those values, and for that reason we are opposed to using state funds for this purchase. And I'm going to turn it over to Rabbi Shosh Dworsky to talk more about those values.
So my name is Rabbi Shoshana Susan Dworsky. I live in 64B in St. Paul, and I work at as a rabbi at Carleton College. And I have tremendous compassion and sympathy for the people of Appleton who have seen their economy decline, the farming and the manufacturing. And as a Minnesotan, I care about you. But this is not the way to go. And it was especially important for me to come here because we are 2 weeks from Passover. So in 2 weeks on Friday night, Jews locally throughout the country, worldwide, will be sitting down at their dinner tables to talk about the issue of freedom and to talk about the unjust deprivation of freedom of the Israelites in Egypt. That will be the story. And they will do a close reading of the beginning of the book of Exodus, where what happens is that the Pharaoh looks out on his country, and he sees there are lots of Israelites. And that's the problem for him. It's a population problem. He's frightened of them. It says so explicitly. He's frightened of this huge population of foreigners, and he doesn't know what to do. And I think we'll probably all agree that he goes down the wrong path for lack of vision, for lack of creating thinking. All he can think to do is to control them. And as Reverend Bates said, controlling the population does not make us all safe. And in the end, it backfires. So this prison system that we are working on here, we need to work on it, but we need to think much bigger and much more creatively. In the Jewish liturgy, every morning we say the blessing, blessed are you, Adonai, our God, who frees the captive. The God of the Jewish people, the God of the Israelites, is the God who hears the cry of the prisoner and we pray is with us when we try to free the captive. That's what we should be working on.
Thank you.
So just to conclude my portion, the state appears to be considering paying $139 million, of which $74 million would go to a corporation called CoreCivic, which has refused to pay its actual fair share of taxes to fund our actual core civic responsibilities of the state, including mental health care, physical health care, and education, which our partners in rural communities have said multiple times are their top priorities. Instead, they've sued and challenged the local area, the local counties, to bring the their tax obligation down to $14 million. And so we should not be rewarding this behavior by spending our state resources to support a corporation where the projects and the profits will actually be redirected from the values of healthcare and education and all the things that will actually redirect folks from the prison. Thank you.
Thank you both. I've got Annika Bowie. And then Eliza Darris after that. And if Eliza wants to come down and sit in the spare chair.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee.
My name is Annika Bowie, and I'm a representative from NAACP Minneapolis. I'm the co-chair of the Criminal Justice Reform Committee. And part of our 10-point liberation plan for people of color is to eliminate mass incarceration. So this capital investment actually goes against the betterment of low-income communities and communities of colors that we serve. Eliminating institutionalized racism is a key component of what we do. We actually have forgiven hundreds of warrants in Ramsey County as well as in Hennepin County. And I'm also the lead organizer of the Restore the Vote Coalition, and this appropriation of funds to prison will increase the population of disenfranchised voters, which will be counterproductive to you guys as representatives who need voters. Crime is actually down in Minnesota between 2008 to 2016, but more people are getting locked up. So Mr. Miller is correct that more people are getting locked up in Minnesota, but there's abundance of agencies that are actually looking to divert those who are nonviolent offenders so we don't have an issue of prison population. Why exactly has Minnesota not tracked with the majority of the nation is an open question. Where on a national level, prison population is actually decreasing. And I think we should follow that trend. And I have a quote from Jeff Aggie, who is a vice president of NAACP Minneapolis. And his quote is, "It is counterproductive that we can build and improve prisons while denying the building of people who are affected by the inequitable criminal justice system." Thank you.
Thank you. Eliza Darris, welcome to the committee. If you can please state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Eliza Darris. It's E-L-I-Z-E-R. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I have a few points for consideration that I would love to be able to leave with y'all. I am formerly incarcerated. I'm also currently with the ACLU. Some of the points that I want to initially just drop, I only have 2 minutes, but I want to say that I'm really disappointed to actually be sitting here and have this issue yet again come before us. I feel like some issues are just issues that should just be finished and moved on so that we can look at real and actual practical ways to get really deep and devastating issues resolved. To me, it just doesn't feel as though this issue that we've already gone over several times over is getting us to the point of getting this thing done. And so to me, this issue should pretty much be done, and I will hope that this just doesn't come before this committee again. Some of the issues that I have with regard to opening up Appleton is, first and foremost, what is best for the community. We know that education impacts dramatically recidivism. We also know that while a person is in custody, his or her attachments to family also is secondary to education in terms of impacting recidivism and keeping our community safe. And so what we will be looking at is a three-hour travel for family members going one way, visiting for 2 hours, 3 hours travel going back another way. So if that family member was to leave the house at 1 o'clock, they would get there at 4 o'clock. They would visit until 6 o'clock and get home at 9 o'clock. And I'm not sure how many family members will actually be able to do something like that. We also know that that some of the best ways of actually keeping us safe is to look at some really practical ways of having more individuals leave out of the overcrowded facilities into something like supervised release, which, you know, knowing where people are located, knowing more about what they are doing, to me seems more practical. And we have a huge prison population of individuals who are incarcerated for drug crimes.
I apologize, Mr.
Anderson.
I really do hope that you can provide all of your testimony to us.
I will do that.
And we'll make sure it gets out to everybody.
I was trying to read off of my statement without reading the statement.
I have the same issues.
But I will submit it in writing. Hopefully, this will be one of the last times that, you know, we are addressing this issue and that we're looking for some actual practical ways, because I also sympathize with what's happening in Appleton. And I think that there are some really great ideas that should be able to come forward so that we can revitalize that economy as well. And so thank you all for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. And now I do need to ask, is there anybody else that wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, if you can please come forward. And I only see one person, so welcome to the committee. Yep.
Thank you.
And if you can.
I'll be real brief.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
My name is Benjamin Ramirez, Ben for short.
Thank you.
What I'm going to say is massive arrests and deportations, the breakup of families and trauma to children, the misguided funding of prisons led by private companies and lobbyists, and the construction of walls between different races of people and their cultures is immoral, divisive, and destructive, and does not contribute to improving our world. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Representative Olson, you wanted to make a motion.
Yes, I'd like to amend the motion to send this to public safety, and I'd like a roll call on that. And just to explain that motion, I think the conversation we had here is really around public safety. We're a state government finance committee, and I don't think we even got some satisfactory time to discuss some of the numbers in here. And I think the discussion really needs to happen in public safety about the need for prisons and really needs to be vetted through the appropriate committee.
Okay. Representative Miller.
Madam Chair, thank you, members. Representative Olson, I don't support this only because we have been through public safety last year and we were through it the previous 2 years at some level or another. So I appreciate these conversations, and I think these are very important conversations to be had. But the bill before us now, as I said in the beginning, these are really good conversations to have, but this is about the Department of Corrections saying that they had a need, that they have a need, and this is a way to address that need. If they don't have the need, then we don't have to talk about this. In 2016, the Department of Corrections came forward with a $141 million bonding request for 500 prison beds, with the expectation that within a few years they're going to have to ask for another 500 beds. So this is not, and I fully support everything that people have been saying. My heart burns for these people. Okay. but we have a need in the state of Minnesota, and all these conversations would go even more egregious if we went and overspent for these beds that are being planned to be built in the future by the Department of Corrections. So I'm trying to provide an asset to address that need, nothing else. And I fear that if we bring this into the Department of, into the Committee of Public Safety, we're going to fall back into a lot of these conversations. I don't know if you've been part of those committees before. We've had the conversations. I believe it's time to move on and have the conversation before us.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. To that point, I appreciate it, but if I understood correctly, that would have been for leasing the building. We're talking about substantially a pretty big number here, and to the point of the state government finance and to what this means for, you know, our entire, I think it does vet need a different level of vetting than when we were talking about leasing. And to that point, too, we didn't hear from the Department of Corrections today about if this is needed and supported by them. And, again, why I think it's important that we go have this conversation in public safety. I don't feel satisfied having not had this conversation with the Department of Correction that you're citing as needing this. I did not hear them or see them here today.
Madam Chair.
Representative Miller,
very
briefly.
Promise. This bill before us is a progression from those conversations. There was a lease to own or own was what the bill was, and it came to the conversation of, well, we need to assess what we have out there. So that study was done last year. We brought forward the assessment. I don't even necessarily agree with everything that assessment. We take them at their word, and we're saying this is the next step. So this is a progression from those conversations.
Representative Ward, to this motion. Is it to this motion? If not, I'll call on you next. Okay, so Representative Olson has moved that the bill be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. She has requested a roll call. Members, if you look in the bill on line 1.8, this is dealing with the Commissioner Administration. The Commissioner Administration is the one that receives the funding for that and manages it. It is not the Department of Corrections or the Department of Public Safety. So with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Nash?
No.
Depper?
No.
Benson?
No.
Flanagan?
Yes.
Green?
No.
Quinice Padin?
Yes.
Lilly?
Yes.
Podesta?
No.
Olson?
Yes.
Pew?
No.
Wham?
Nine.
Hoogland? Vogel?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
Okay. On a vote of 5-9, the Representative Olson motion does not prevail. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have discussed this endlessly in public safety, and it has not gone anywhere for a reason. Commissioner Roy is here, and I wondered if he would come down and be willing to talk to us just for a minute. And while he might do that.
I apologize, Representative Ward. I asked for if there was anybody else that wished to testify. I only received one person. Well, I'm going to be making a motion here shortly.
Thank you. One of the conclusions that we have come to is that the money would be better spent in current facilities, and Max Hall pointed that out. The money would be better spent in youth intervention and early childhood family education programs and some of the other opportunities that people have discussed for us. Let's spend the money in front of the problem so that we don't put human beings behind bars needlessly.
And I'm going to renew my motion to have House File 3106 be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment without recommendation.
I would like to request a roll call on that.
Representative Olson requests a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Anderson?
Yes.
Nash?
Yes.
Kepner?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Flanagan?
No.
Green?
Yes.
Denise Padin?
No.
Lilly?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Olson?
No.
Hill?
Yes.
Plum?
C.
Hoogland? Vogel?
Yes.
Ward?
No.
On a vote of 9-5, the motion does prevail. The committee, the House File 3106 will be referred to Committee on Capital Investment. Thank you, Representative Miller. And with, it's already on there. With that, we are adjourned.